or while I will wait while my presentation is loaded, which concerns one of the key things we did in our book, which was to explore and develop the idea of mechanisms of legal effect and explain why we think that's so important. Just want to let you know I have nothing to let you know, except about the book, but I don't think that counts. Your readers, not patients. The theme for my talk is a simple one. Law doesn't just happen to health outcomes. You know, very often we see evaluations of legal interventions that are designed like this. And there's a big black box where how the law produces the health outcome could and should be. And yet, we actually know an enormous amount about how law works. We know it changes norms. We know it changes the environment in other ways, the physical environment or the product environment. We know it influences individual judgments and even affective processes. And knowing that is important. Although not so much in health, the way law works has actually been the subject of enormous amounts of research over an extended period of time. In criminology, in economics, in the sociology of law, you know, going back 100 years or more, in social psychology, and even to some degree in public health, we have research that illuminates, in theory and in data, how law makes these changes. And we mention them in the book. My argument today is simply that we really should open this black box, and here's the value proposition for that claim. I mean, first of all, using theory and research on the mechanism of legal effect is really useful for better defining what phenomena you want to observe in the research. The intermediate steps between the passage of the law and your set of health outcomes or behavioral changes. Because so much of the work we do, and I say this proudly and with no apology, is observational, since we require a great deal of luck and planning and work to get an experimental test of a law, obviously having an understanding of the mechanism and even evidence of the mechanism that helps us understand and how we might get from the input to the output is a classic way of strengthening our confidence in causal inference. And finally, very rarely do we see the law and the enforcement and the actual communication of the new norms and so on happen smoothly. Implementation is a rocky process. And studying the way the law is supposed to work, understanding the mechanism of effect, is very useful down the road for guiding fine-tuning also sort of giving us a greater confidence in innovations that represent a variation or a new intervention in law that's nonetheless working the way a previous intervention has worked. So my example for today, and we're going to come back to this a number of times, is what's known as the Leistat Law. This is a law that first passed in Washington and subsequently passed by almost every state that is meant to deal with youth sports concussion. And this is sort of the logic model that the law works on. I won't get into whether this is the right one or not, because there's some dispute about this whole approach. But the point is, this focuses on essentially on secondary prevention. After a concussion has occurred, the problem is people don't know about concussion as a problem, or for various reasons they don't want to let others know, they want to keep playing, that kind of thing, or they just don't know how to detect a concussion. It leads to either a failure to remove from play after a concussion or a premature return to play, which heightens the risk of repeat concussion and then all the bad health outcomes there. So Zach Leistat was a kid who, in junior high school, who had two concussions at least in one game and ended up being severely injured, much more severely than most kids. And his parents and a lot of public health people and others got together, and the NFL, and produced this law, which was then adopted nationwide with very few variations. And the basic idea is it's going to use health education. Parents are going to know about, and kids and coaches are going to know more about concussion and how to detect it. And it's going to set a standard that requires people who have concussions to be removed from the game and not to return to play unless and until they're cleared by health professionals. So You know, from the innovation point of view, if you were the legislators working on that law at the beginning, you'd want to know, presumably, how do we actually get people to obey this law? There's quite a lot of social momentum behind football and sports and trying hard and playing hurt and all this sort of stuff. So it's not a slam dunk that you would get people to, you know, change such an intimate behavior. And from the evaluation point of view, you really want to understand, okay, what should we be going out and measuring between concussion and health outcomes or repeat concussions so that we can tell whether this law is working. Now, you know, the classic thing that most people go to when they're talking about how law works is deterrence, right? You know, there's a threat of punishment and that makes people change their behavior. Well, deterrence is somewhat overused and maybe even overrated. In this case, however, most states' laws don't provide any penalty for a coach, for example, who fails to comply with the rule. And indeed, for somebody who even in a competitive high school environment who's expected to win to keep their job, compliance might actually seem less costly than non-compliance. Likewise, you know, players may see the penalty here as being removed from the game. And generally, enforcing rules through the threat of sanction is less desirable and may even undermine what we really want, which is compliance without enforcement. That's how you get mass change. Not enough cops to make people do things. So deterrence is the classic. It's interesting, but really doesn't work. Bertie already said that. Now let's look at procedural justice. This is a really great theory that's come out of social psychology, actually. Tom Tyler, so great that he was elevated from a mere psychology department to the faculty of the Yale Law School. But this has been exhaustively tested. It's got scales. It's been replicated time and time again in all sorts of settings. And basically, it's an elaboration of Weber's classic notion of obedience coming from a sense of legitimacy or obligation and trust, to which he's added the fact that empirically the experience of procedural fairness believed in your encounters with lawmakers has a strong effect on your willingness to comply and your ultimate compliance. So certainly one way we can think about this and ask the question of what's going to happen with this law and how we measure it is whether the key stakeholders actually think it's legitimate for legislatures to be setting rules for sports or interfering with football. If they don't, that's going to be a suggestion. If they think of that as sort of out of bounds, illegitimate, that's going to be an indicator of possible problems in compliance. Likewise, perceptions that somehow this isn't fairly enforced, some teams get an advantage, other teams don't, something like that could undermine the rule. But actually, to me, the best way of understanding this law, the best way to understand the mechanism of how it works, is to go to, you know, basic social psychology and behavioral science here. This is Brian Flay's theory of triadic influence, which is basically based on theory of reasoned action model, all that sort of stuff, theory of planned behavior. That lineage adds a lot more stuff to it. So this is a classic social science explanation of behavior, but you can integrate law very easily into this. And this is one of, you know, our basic sort of two techniques we adopt and propose in the book, is that, you know, you can use classic legal theory and put it into a health setting, or you can use classic, you know, behavioral science and just integrate law. It's not a strange outlier. It fits right in. So, you know, generally, Brian would suggest that it goes in this notion of sort of the cultural attitudinal stream. And what we expect is the law states this new norm and sets a new standard of behavior, which is then transmitted through a variety of school and sports and other public institutions such that coaches and players internalize information and judgments about concussions in sports, and they actually start to change their attitudes, right? They learn something here. But it can also work through the social stream. It cuts right across, right? Because what's happening here is, again, when law sets a norm, norms are transmitted through interpersonal relationships. And coaches and players begin to internalize an emerging norm against playing hurt. Right? Lots of our laws work this way. You have to wear a seatbelt. You shouldn't smoke, you know, in a public place. You should put your kid in a child restraint device in the car. And so they begin to change their own views about what's proper behavior. At least they perceive that even if they continue to believe that it's okay to play hurt, a lot of people in the stands may not. And finally, of course, what happens in the internally in the intrapersonal stream or actively, people begin to use the law to strengthen their own resolve and ability to adopt the new behavior. So in the end, you know, this law doesn't provide a punishment. It doesn't have an enforcement or oversight mechanism. But in fact, everybody in the stands becomes an enforcer and a monitor. Right? It works by changing the norm. And so what you know if you want to measure the effect of this law is see what's happening in these streams. Measure these changes in self-efficacy, in perceived norms, in attitudes, and that will tell you whether this law is working. And if implementation tells you that we're not getting the information across, if people are not learning this, then you know the weak link is probably not that you're not sending somebody to jail, but that you're not actually investing enough in the social marketing of this new norm. So that's just one demonstration. There's a lot more in the book. We cover many, many situations. And now I will turn the podium over to Alex Wagner.